were going down to beautiful Kerry and to Dangany Cooch. Philip King, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan. How are you keeping?
I'm great, thanks. And you're out and about in Dangany Cooch for the, it's the 21st Other Voices this year, is it?
It's the 21st anniversary of Other Voices this year, and it's a glorious winter's morning, full of winter light in West Kerry this morning, Brendan, and you'd love it if you were here. You're going to have to make it down one of the years, so you are.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's on my list.
Yeah, fantastic music. Great gathering up of people, about 6,000-7,000 people in the town. And Paolo Nutini was walking down the main street, getting photographed by everybody he met in the place last night. It was just absolutely fantastic.
And Philip, and you've lots of other people there this weekend, Circa Richardson, Gemma Dunleavy, Inhaler, loads of them. Artists seem to find other voices, and I suppose St. James Church in particular, a very special gig to play. What's the alchemy there?
I don't know. I think it's probably the allure of the place itself, the sheer physical beauty of West Kerry. And artists are, I suppose, very sensitive beings. And when they come to a place like this, they feel it. They feel that there's something in the place. They feel that there is a respect for the music. And they keep coming back. But you touched on something very interesting there. When we set out to do this thing day one, 21 years ago, I think that if we had, if it's a mission statement, if it's the right phrase to use, Brendan, is that what we set out to do was to celebrate what's about to happen and to give a platform along with the public service broadcaster, with RTE, to a new generation of people who want to make their life in music and who want to create songs and stories. And if you reviewed the soundtrack that we've captured over those 21 years, I think it's a very powerful, emotional response to the times that we've been living in. The good times, the bad times, the isolation of COVID, the economic crash, and all that goes with it. The artists are the people that document that emotionally. And I always remember Frank Hart, the great song collector and wonderful singer, saying that if you want to know the facts, consult the history books. If you want to know what it felt like, ask the singer. And I guess we're dealing in the business of feelings, if you like.
And so what is the feeling this year then? Is there a feel, this is the first time audiences are fully back and everything. Is there a feeling of joy and of renewal and coming back out and coming together again and that?
Yeah, absolutely, Brendan. There's that real sensation of people being, you know, out on the street, you know, outside the bars, outside the various different rooms that the music is happening in, and it's happening all over the town. There are 80 different bands playing in various different venues, bar rooms, box rooms, bedrooms, every class of a place, and then the church itself and the Hillgrove Hotel. So really, it's all going on. And there's also a whole sort of discursive element to the thing going on now.
Yeah, we'll come to that in a minute. But let me
called Ireland's Edge, which happened yesterday and the day before. That was very interesting as well, because here we are, the beginnings of, I suppose, the first decade of a new century of independence, and we could say maybe is Ireland at a crossroads. We're saying to ourselves, we're a modern, pluralist, diverse, democratic republic as we head on into a second century of independence. So various different people, different contrarian voices, some establishment voices, all in a room together, many newspaper people, people that you would know very well, Brendan, like people like Noreen Hegarty, and Ruan McCormick is going to be here as well, talking about where we are, what might be in front of us, and where it is we might be going, and what road do we need to take right now.
OK, so what kind of questions are being tackled at Ireland's Edge this year?
Well, I would say that the fundamental and profound questions, and we see it here right at the edge of Europe, at the western edge of Europe, is, I suppose, the business of climate, of sustainable energy. And you know this place well, Brendan. I went up to the top of Mount Eagle there not so long ago, and a big gale of wind came in from the Blasket Islands. And for the first time I had the sensation, I said to myself, that's our wind, right? Hang on a sec. We own that wind. It's ours. Would that be, if we harness it correctly, if we can put the infrastructure in place correctly, offer us a possibility of having an independent, green and sustainable energy source, and would we be able to pay for the infrastructure to put that together? We saw the Taoiseach last week in France opening the interconnector between Ireland and France. So could we become a net exporter of energy? Some of those questions were asked and not fully answered, but, you know, people from Airgrid and people from various different other companies and people from the IDA and Enterprise Ireland, Leo Clancy was here, were beginning to talk about those sorts of things. And of course,
okay,
running in parallel with that, we have, I suppose, on the one hand, you know, the investment in the hard sciences, the STEM subjects in Ireland, and I'm in the humanities side of the house, as you'd know well. And I'm always trying to get a place or get us into a room where we might find that there might be a convergence between the sciences and the humanities. Because if they converge, wouldn't it be true to say that we might have a better portrait of a possibility and better outcomes if we work together rather than in isolation one from the other? Some of those things were talked about as well.
See, it's interesting what you say, because obviously very interesting things go on when creative people get together and they're there in a place that is so dramatic and hums with so much poetry and everything else. But I kind of wonder, you look back before, were creative people more at the centre of the conversation before? You look at the old chat shows and whatever, like they were more writers, etc., more in a central leadership position, maybe foregrounded in conversations more.
I'm not sure I would agree with that. I was reading that article by Simon Sharma in the Financial Times yesterday where he talks about that art and culture is going to be a salve and a succour for us in this time of great flux and difficulty. And I've always believed that to be true. But I also believe that we have a natural resource of imagination in Ireland that informs our arts, our creativity. And always remember that artwork and creative work and writing songs is creating intellectual property.
Yeah.
It is creating something that has an intrinsic value in itself. But I think that there is something more important than that, that we can't just take a granular view of, you know, the value of investment in the arts, for example, because what I would say to that is that there is no metric for the priceless, because what these things do is they give us the motive force, the energy and the ability to keep on keeping on through difficulty, but also in times of joy. It's just fantastic. And I know, Brendan, that, you know,
and look, that's important,
the Voices,
right?
21 years ago, an old mutual friend of ours, the late Kevin Lenehan, was so involved at the RTE end of things when we set the ball rolling here. And we grew up together, Kevin and myself, in Cork City. And the first notes of music that were ever dropped into my ear were really with Kevin. And I just want to, on a personal note, always remember him with great affection and fondness and gratitude at this time of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a cool dude, wasn't he?
Cool dude.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm interested, though, in what you say about the arts and creativity and priceless in its own way and everything else. But it is something we're a winner at, and we can see actual results from it. I mean, even seeing where we are at in terms of animation and all these other industries. If that's something we're a winner at, can we take strengths from that and apply them across the board into other industries? Can our kind of, whatever those strengths we have as creative people, authenticity hugely valued these days, which we're perceived to have, can we move that out from the creative space?
I mean, I think the creative thing is a sine qua non when it comes to the issues that are facing us right now. This is a new world that we're living in. I mentioned the fact that we're 100 years old and that we're beginning to look into the portrait of what the possibilities for Ireland will be as an independent democratic republic at the edge of Europe. And I believe, Brendan, that the creative spirit, the natural resource of imagination that we have in spades in this country, if harnessed correctly, if the education system is calibrated in the right way, that it becomes enabling, where we don't fear failure, where we try and try again, where those light bulb moments can come on, then I think that we are going to be in a very, very interesting place. Up until now, it's very interesting to see the tax returns, you know, at the end of this week. Ireland again doing very well. Foreign direct investment continuing to play a very significant part. But it's my belief that we need to grow, own and monetize our own intellectual property if we are to have an independent wealth proposition that's going to address health, housing and education. So I agree with you. It's the arts and the creative things work in two separate spheres. There is the practical results of what it is that we produce, but it is also the thing that gives us the feeling of feeling good. So when somebody stopped me in the street last night and said, I saw Sir Nicole Richardson playing in the church and wasn't it absolutely wonderful? I feel wonderful. What is that feeling worth? If we were to put some sort of a price tag on that, it's very, very hard to do. So from that motive force point of view, from that motivational point of view, it gives us a sensation of who we are. It gives us a sensation of what might be possible. And I'm speaking to you from the Dingle Peninsula, a place where the language is extant, a place that Máirtín Ócáin would have referred to as the Hare's Corner or Cúine an Gurria, a place that is not just mowed down. When you mow down the whole field, you leave no place for the hare to flourish.
Yeah.
But if you leave that little corner of the field there, and there are several of them in this country, they nourish and sustain us in ways that are truly remarkable. And we're going to bookend the whole Other Voices thing tonight with a truly remarkable musician from this place. His name is Cormac Begley. He's a concertina player. But what he has done with this instrument is something that I haven't seen in my long career being involved in music and music creativity one way or the other. He has reinvented what's possible with the instrument itself while remaining true to the tradition out of which it comes. And that's like an interesting metaphor for Ireland, isn't it?
Yeah,
because
it is the ultimate in mastery as well, isn't it? If you actually change the game,
can it keep us? You know, can it give us the stuff that we need to keep at it, if you like?
Yeah, yeah. Listen, you're a Cork boy, as you alluded to there, from Glasheen. When and why did you move down there?
I suppose when I was a kid, and Kevin and myself actually came down here in 1967 and stayed in a house in a place called Keelera, not very far from where I now live. And I suppose the notes and the cadences and the rhythm of the language fell into our ears. Yeah. And I fell in love with the place. And then I went to UCC and I did Irish in UCC, Irish and English degree. And one thing led to another and I kept coming back here. And after a life as a musician on the road and making films of various different sorts, when we had a young family, we decided to leave Dublin and come and live here permanently. And that's almost 25 years ago now. And I suppose it was out of that really and conversations with Kevin and others that the Other Voices thing grew, a seed was sown, and I'm delighted to say that it has flourished and is still here. And it's just great to see the artists coming together, as you've said, and come together after the isolation, if you like, of COVID and collapse distance between us. And we're all leading digital lives now. And, you know, the microprocessor is everywhere in our lives. And sometimes if we're screen dominated and everything that we do is on a phone or on a screen, we need something that will ameliorate that digital loneliness and pull us together in that human, tactile, visceral way. And that's the warmth, really, that's at the heart of the Other Voices experience right now.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, I suppose that digital world has meant that even though you might seem very far away geographically from the centre of your kind of industries, there's quite a creative hub down there that is able to interface with the rest of the world, isn't it?
Correct. That's right. That's absolutely right. And these two things, are interwoven together now in the DNA of what it is to be a human right now. And, you know, we have, as I've said before, we have this natural gift. We've seen it in our writers. Look at the film industry right now. I mean, it is absolute. And Colin Braid is going to be here this afternoon, you know, the guy that directed on Colleen Kuhn, and he's going to be talking about them. Sorica Richardson and Eve Hewson are going to be sitting down together this afternoon. They went to school together in Dalkey a long time ago, and they're going to sit down and have a chat about their lives and their careers. And, you know, it's that creative spirit. It's the human thing and the digital thing. The digital thing is not going away. It is woven into every aspect of our lives right now. But it's keeping the balance right, I think, will keep us fairly centered and fairly good. And one of the questions, I suppose, we must ask ourselves in this modern world right now, in the state of flux that it's in. When I was a kid growing up, I suppose the rows used to be between, are you left or are you right? I now think it's a tension between democracy and authoritarianism. And, you know, we must fall down on the right side of that. And sometimes I think we take the democracy piece for granted. But it's the human thing, really, that I'm getting at, Brendan, really, that that I think there is something in the Irish DNA, if you like.
Yeah, that, it's interesting, though.
That keeps us sort of human. And even though we're isolated and a bit digital, when it gets down to it, you know, it's a chat like this. It's a good old natter. It's coming together in real time to raise our voices, to sing and to celebrate who and what we are.
Yeah, yeah. The another interesting thing about it all, of course, and you did all this kind of trace this lineage with bringing it all back home, is that those young musicians coming down there playing rock and roll might feel that they're a million miles away from the centre of rock and roll. But really, it's places like down there, Corcaguina and other places like that, that were kind of the cradle of rock and roll, weren't they?
Well, there's something about this place. So when a band like The National from Cincinnati, Ohio, came to Dingle for the first time, I knew that they sensed that there was something in this place that was really good for a musician to be. In other words, they felt the spirit of the place, if you like.
Yeah, but literally the music from down there went off to...
There was no dichotomy between, or there was no row, if you like, between rock and roll on the one hand and pure traditional music on the other. And I spent my life really navigating that world where all of our musics and the diversity of our music becomes interwoven. Like last night, Gillaband, with a very loud and strong industrial sound with a huge, huge bottom end, were doing one thing. And then you have Paolo Nutini closing out the night with, you know, the sanctuary of the great singer-songwriter with a torch voice that really was, it would just, get emotion from a stone. It was just great to see. The diversity is the thing.
Yeah.
The diversity is the thing.
Yeah, and that music, it bounced from there out to Appalachia or whatever, and now bouncing right back there. And listen, you've been back on the road yourself as well with Scullion, have you?
Well, I mean, there's going to be a performance this afternoon at 4 o'clock in the D-shirt, and I've never enjoyed anything so much, Brendan, as going back on the road and to play music, particularly after COVID, and to have the opportunity to do it is a real, real privilege. And to work with Robbie and Sonny and have a whole load of new songs to go out and play is just wonderful. It's a wonderful feeling to sit on the stage. And like we did all those years ago in the folk clubs of Ireland and England and off to Germany and Holland all those years ago, to be back in rooms with people in real time playing music and loving it. And the bringing it all back home thing set me off on a musical expedition, as you said, to America and back, and to be part of beginning to understand how our music left here in the heads and the hands and the feet of economic migrants, really, who went to England, but mainly to America from this part of the world. You know, if you stand in Dunquin and you look west, the next parish is is Boston or is New York. And our music went there and it was decanted and written down and encoded and sent back to us on wax cylinders and 78 records. And the American experience left an indelible thumbprint on the making of Irish dance music, or Ciol Rinkin na Héireann, as we would call it, traditional music, and then came back to Ireland and we copied what came from America because it was louder and faster and really more exciting. So exploring the DNA of our music culture has been, again, a real privilege, and exposing that. And I'd say if there was a highlight, I always remember sitting in a room with Dolores Cain and Mary Black and Emmylou Harris, and then downstairs were the Everly Brothers and the late Liam O'Flynn and Donal Lunny playing together. And that was a truly sort of, I don't know, amazing experience to hear Don and Phil begin to sing. And, you know, they close their eyes and they are right next to each other, and when they sing together you just don't know where the sound is coming from. But without them there's no Simon and Garfunkel, and there's no Beatles. And John and Paul McCartney recently said that, you know, we used to sit in the box room in our house and, you know, John was Don and I was Phil. So, you know, it was just to be part of or in a room with people who made what's possible in terms of what we call popular music was a huge privilege. And to know that we in Ireland had something to do with those songs that the Everly sang that day, songs our daddy taught us, songs that came from the songbooks and from the people that migrated to Appalachia where they grew up.
Yeah. And look, on and it goes, always forward, but being beaten senselessly back into the past, or whatever that last line of Gatsby is.
I think we'll have to arm ourselves for the future.
Yeah.
And but we can be informed by the past, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, we can be informed by tradition, but it's what we do with it and we take it. We shouldn't view tradition as a break. Tradition can be viewed as an accelerator, if you know what I mean, because it gives us a sense of who we are.
Yeah.
And it also gives us a sense of what we might become. Music has always, for me, been prophetic. And I think it was Jacques Attali, the French political economist, said that what music does is it makes audible the thing that gradually becomes visible. It is the herald of the future.
Yeah. And listen, you can't know where you're at if you don't know where you're coming from. All right, Philip, best of luck with the rest of the festival. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.